Well, it's time that we begin. We've got with us this morning Ken Lowry. He's the Associate Director for the Churches of Christ Disaster Relief. And he is so graciously going to talk with us this morning about the work of this great thing. It got its start right at Hurricane Hugo. Ken, he brought his boss along, Jennifer. And so we're grateful that they are here this morning to spend some time with us to get us a better understanding of the work that they do. It is a difficult work, but one that is full of compassion to be able to help our fellow man, as we know we are commanded to bear one another's burdens, and this is one way that we do those things. It's good to see Brother Vernon back, and hopefully Rhonda's feeling better too. Continue to be in our prayers. We do have a number that are still out sick, not feeling well, so we need to keep them all in our prayers. And we're going to start, though, first with a word of prayer, and if you will, bow with me, please. Our God and Father in heaven, we're so grateful, Lord, for our time together. It is very precious, Lord, and probably the most important day of our week, Lord, to be able to get our strength and our courage and to be able to face the new week as it comes. We're just grateful, Lord, that you're always in our corner, that you continually lift us up and give us the strength to move forward each and every day and through all of our trials and tribulations. We just pray, Lord, that you'll be with us this day and to strengthen us this day and allow us to enjoy this time of learning and worship and be able to continue having our faith strengthened each and every day, just knowing that we do not walk alone in this world. We're grateful for men like Ken and his wife Jennifer to be able to do this work that provides so much help to those who have lost everything or who are suffering because of the disasters that we face each and every year. The work that they do, Lord, is insurmountable, but they continue to do everything they can to provide that relief and to provide comfort. So we ask your blessings on them as they continue. Give them the strength, Lord, to continue to carry out this vital work and to bring honor and glory to you, Lord, because it is your church that is doing this vital work. We pray for our sick and for those who may be traveling, those who cannot be here, Lord. We ask you watch over them and keep them in your safe hands. Heal them if that is your will, Lord, and return them to us that we may fellowship with them. And we ask now, Lord, that you forgive us. We know we do not walk the perfect life, and we oftentimes give in to the temptations around us. But we pray, Lord, that you will find us good and faithful servants, that we try to overcome those things. So we ask for your forgiveness of those things. And continue to give us the strength and the honor and glory, Lord, that you promise us all. And forgive us always in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Brother Ken.
Good morning. It's an honor and a privilege for Jennifer and I to be able to be here and worship with you all today. We appreciate the invitation, and we appreciate always the opportunity to be with brothers and sisters of the Lord's Church. I'll give you just a little bit of background about myself, just so that you understand who we are, and then we'll get into our class this morning. I have worked with Churches of Christ Disaster Relief now. We're in our 12th year. I retired after 30 years in the pharmaceutical business. As my late father used to say when they would ask, where is Ken? He said, well, he's in Florida selling drugs. And I said, Dad, can you put some context around that? That can mean different things to different people. But my family is from West Tennessee, about 2 hours west of Nashville. Jennifer is a native of Cary, North Carolina, where we live, just outside Raleigh, and we are one of five that do this for disaster relief nationwide. Our area is the Southeast, so we have responsibility for everything from the Mississippi River to the Atlantic, Tennessee, and North Carolina South. So you can imagine when those little hurricanes are swirling around, we sometimes say it's just going to hit our area because so many times they do. And in fact, as was referenced, I find it ironic that the first time that disaster relief worked and was created was following Hugo. And you all probably remember Hugo very, very well. I believe that was 89 when Hugo hit and came into Charleston and wasn't supposed to come this far west. Nobody told Hugo, and it continued its damage through Charlotte and all the way up to the Canadian border. Well, a few years later, in 1992, in South Florida, there was a hurricane named Andrew. Andrew is where we became organized the way that we are now. When Hugo hit, the congregations in the Nashville area, at that time, there was a thing called a phone book, and there were 129 congregations in Davidson County, Nashville, that wanted to do something to help the brethren that had been impacted by Hugo. And so they started by having everyone at every congregation, they just sent out a note and said, go to the store, buy a bag, and we'll rent a truck, and we'll take it to South Carolina. You can only imagine what was on that truck, a little bit of everything. After Andrew, it became apparent we needed to be better organized, and that's what we have now. In a few minutes, we'll talk about that truck. As we prepare our study, though, this morning, I'd like, if you have your New Testament, open it to the book of Galatians. There's a passage in Galatians that Paul, writing to the church at Galatia, I believe applies so directly to what we do here. In Galatians chapter 6, beginning in verse 9, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Verse 10, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are the household of faith. When we talk about Churches of Christ disaster relief, verse 10 seems to apply directly. As we therefore have opportunity. The Lord's church is designed for each congregation to function autonomously, independent. There's no broad organization. You sometimes hear references of other religious groups that have associations or groups that handle these things. That's not the way God wanted the church to be established and organized. Each congregation is independent. And so what we have done as Churches of Christ Disaster Relief is that we have served as a function to reach out to individual congregations whenever a disaster occurs in their area, and we provide them at no cost supplies, emergency supplies, and goods, and we ask them to give them out in the name of the Lord to help those that are impacted. I don't like to use the term rules, but we have two things that we ask that congregation. Number one, we ask that you give it to anyone in need, regardless of their faith. Number two, we ask that it be given out only by members of the Lord's church. You see, we are supported by individuals and congregations of the Lord's church with the expectation that that's who's going to give it out. And by that, I mean, you can't turn it over to the Red Cross. You can't give it to the government agency. I don't know if you've experienced anything wherever you might have lived. I know some of you may have been in places where disaster relief has worked. But oftentimes what happens, the local government, in an attempt to be efficient, will say, well, we're going to combine everything. We're going to do it all here. We're going to do it in the community center. We're going to do it from this, you know, location. And we'll give everything out here so that people have one-stop shopping. That sounds good, but that's not what this is. This is a work of the Lord's church. I'm often asked, said, is this benevolence or is it evangelism? And I have a one-word response to that. The answer is yes. It's both. Jesus didn't separate when he was teaching the multitudes. He also fed them. He didn't separate benevolence and evangelism, and I don't know why we would do that either. Anything that we do from a benevolent spirit to try to help someone is wonderful. But if we're not giving them something spiritual to help them beyond that, of what value is it? So when we're giving something out from disaster relief, it's always with an eye towards how can we help them spiritually. In fact, the very last thing, and we'll talk more about this during the worship hour, the very last thing in the food box, which is packed in Nashville, it's a 60-pound box of supplies that will support a family of four for 5 days. And the food box is a mainstay of what we give out. The very last thing that goes in the top of that food box is a New Testament. And tucked inside that New Testament is a handwritten note from a member of the church. And so this is designed to be an evangelistic tool while being benevolent in nature. And we don't want to have everything put together with the community and people of all different types of faith, because that's not appropriate. And we look for congregations to work, to support, that are teaching God's truth. That's the important thing about what we do. It's not just we'll send a truck to anyone. We send a congregation, send a truck to a faithful congregation of the Lord's church that's interested in helping their community, but also evangelizing. And in a few minutes, I'll start and share with you some of the results of what happens when that truck's unloaded. Right now, our operations center is in Nashville, Tennessee. It's an old Lowe's home improvement warehouse that we've added on to, and we have approximately 80,000 square feet. We have assembled materials and things for this truck, for these trucks, that we can purchase through suppliers at a discounted rate. There's two numbers I'm going to give you this morning. That's all. I'd like for you to remember those numbers. One is every dollar that we receive in contribution, we're able to buy $3 worth of goods because of our purchasing agreements. The other number is one that I hate to have to talk about, but in this day and time, that's what percentage of each dollar that we receive goes directly to helping people. If you look at charitable organizations, you'd be shocked at sometimes how little of your dollar actually ends up helping people. There are some organizations that it's well less than 50%. Some is less than 25%. We have quoted for the last several years that the number for Churches of Christ disaster relief effort is 85%. In other words, 85 cents of every dollar goes directly to helping people. We don't have a lot of overhead. We don't have a lot of administrative cost. Now, that number in the past 3 years is not accurate. We get audited every year because we are a nonprofit organization, and we're audited to see how much we are actually helping people that we say we're helping. The last 3 years, the number has been 95%. That's because we only have 13 employees. That includes our warehouse workers, our administrative staff. And the opportunity that we have to be so efficient is that even our truck drivers are volunteers. People come to pack boxes, they're volunteers. For example, when we put a call out on a call tree across Middle Tennessee, Southern Kentucky, Northern Alabama, we'll put a call out and say, we're going to pack food boxes on Tuesday at 10 a.m. Typically, we'll have somewhere between 300 and 500 people show up, many of them seniors, and they will pack 1,500 food boxes in about 3 hours. We have an assembly line type set up, and the boxes are packed and ready to go. In 3 hours, we pack 1,500 boxes, which is enough to support 3 truckloads. Now, at any given time, we try to have 6 truckloads ready to go. In other words, the pallets are already packed. They're lined up. And one gentleman with a forklift can have that truck loaded and ready to leave in about 45 minutes. Our efforts and our goal is to try to get our trucks delivered as soon as possible to the congregation that needs them, as soon as they're ready to receive them. We have sent out in the past 30 years over $160 million worth of supplies to congregations of the Lord's Church. Each truck is a 53-foot semi. It has 22 pallets on it. And the value of that semi is between $75,000 and $80,000. On that truck are 300 of those family food boxes. Remember, each one will feed a family of four for 5 days. In addition, we put on infant care boxes. That's a box that's already prepared, everything to take care of an infant. Wipes, formula, diapers. We have personal care items for men and women that are prepackaged in a box. We have a cleaning bucket that's prepackaged. It has cleaning supplies, flashlights, batteries, gloves, masks, all ready just to hand out. And see, the interesting thing about this model, if you will, is it's designed so that the receiving congregation, all they have to do is pass it out. They don't have to sort it. They don't have to put it together. They don't have to worry about the logistics of how we're going to distribute. And that has worked so well so many times. In addition to those boxed items, we send pallets of bleach, pallets of bottled water, pallets of cleanser. We send brand new clothing for men, women, and children. Pallets of shoes, we send bedding, we send blankets, sheets, pillows, we send tarps, people to cover their roofs, we send wheelbarrows, rakes, shovels, hose, mops, brooms, all the tools they need. And in fact, everything that is on that truck is designed to help in almost any type of disaster. We've made the decision that we're going to send items that are brand new. So the clothing is brand new. We were talking before the class started, and many times when a disaster occurs, congregations are inundated by old clothing, where people will bring in clothing. And the fact of the matter is, sometimes that clothing is not suitable. Sometimes it's overwhelming, and the effort to sort it and to figure out how to distribute it makes it not worth the effort. Well, we found a congregation in Dallas a few years ago who had a tornado right after Christmas. They were down the street from a thrift store, and they came up with a brilliant idea. They made an agreement with the thrift store that all the clothing that was donated, they would give it to the thrift store that was accustomed to sorting it, going through and arranging it. In exchange, the thrift store gave them vouchers that the church could give out to families and say, you can go in and you can shop and you can get what you need. A much more efficient way for the congregation to spend their effort than to be sorting through piles of old clothing. And so I offer that now when we visit congregations that are impacted, and it has been used many, many times with success. The interesting thing about disaster relief is that not only do we help in those first few hours, there have been many times where our truck has been the first one delivered. Years ago, there was a series of tornadoes in Moore, Oklahoma, outside Oklahoma City. I remember it was a Monday afternoon, about 4:30. And Fox News was there interviewing the minister at the congregation outside Moore, and while they were talking to him, our truck pulled up, and they were able to see it. Many times people have said that's the first relief supplies that we've received. And again, it's our effort to get there within the first 24 to 36 hours, because that's when people are very much in need, especially the food supplies and of the supplies for infant care, etc. Now, there's lots of different types of disasters. We help in all of them. Most notably, the ones that we hear most about are hurricanes and floods and tornadoes. But there's also fires. You may remember a few years ago, there was a chemical spill at a warehouse or a factory in Texas, in a town called West Texas. We sent trucks there. Up in West Virginia, there was an incident a few years ago where the water supply for 100,000 people was contaminated near Charleston. And we sent pallets and truckloads, actually, of water to help to provide relief there. You've heard about the water crisis that occurred in Flint, Michigan. We sent well over $100,000 worth of bottled water to congregations in Flint to be distributed. Most recently, we've sent four trucks out to the west, to California, and to Oregon and to Washington for forest fires. So we've helped in all types of disasters. What we found is that the supplies on that truckload are needed pretty much regardless of the disaster, because it relates to what people have lost in their homes. And so most everyone needs everything on that truck. I laugh and tell the story that about the food box, we've made one change over the 30 years. When we first started, food boxes that were destined for somewhere up north had boxes of oats. If they were headed for places down south, they had grits. That's the only change we've made, is that we've made it consistent where we send the same cereal products both north and south. Over 30 years, though, that box is refined very little. It has everything in there that you need to be able to feed that family of four for 5 days. It even has something I like to play with some of the younger people and show them. It's called a manual can opener. And you can actually open, you don't even need power. And many of the items in that box can be consumed without any heating, without any power. A lot of them are ready to eat. And so it's a wonderful blessing. And I'll tell you, it's very sobering, as we have seen, where people will receive that box from the congregation. They'll take it out to the hood of their car and they'll start to eat because they're hungry. You know, a few years back ago in 2010, Jennifer and I had just started our work. Actually, it was 2011, when the series of tornadoes struck all across the South. It started that Wednesday afternoon in Smithville, Mississippi, which is just south of Tupelo. It hit Hackleburg, Alabama. You may have heard of that. And then it hit Tuscaloosa, destroyed a congregation of the Lord's Church, their building there in Tuscaloosa. It continued across. There were 33 locations that got hit by tornadoes that day, from Mississippi and Alabama to Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. All happened in one afternoon. And it's interesting when you look at the impact of some of those storms. They're on the ground for a very short period of time, but they change life forever. The Smithville, Mississippi congregation found themselves in a unique circumstance. The tornado that hit Smithville was estimated at over 225 miles per hour. One of the deacons at the congregation there in Smithville showed me a cell phone video that showed a car being flung against the top of a water tower and falling straight down. Everything in that town was destroyed for approximately two-thirds of the town limits. Every building where a religious group assembled was destroyed, with the exception of one. It was the building where the Smithville Church of Christ assembled. And our brethren there had a unique opportunity. They reached out to everyone and they did what Paul commanded the Galatians: when you have an opportunity, do good to all men. One of the denominational preachers walked into a place that they had been distributing, and he asked where all of this came from. They said it came from the Church of Christ. Do you know what his response was? That's not possible. They don't do that kind of thing. They changed the perception of the Lord's Church because they did that. they went out and they helped people, and they studied with people. And brethren, that happens time after time after time. Most recently, just in August, on August the 21st of this year, no doubt you heard about a little town in western Tennessee called Waverly. Waverly is about 40 miles from where my family is from, and we happened to be in West Tennessee. Ironically, we were there because on August the 16th, my 96-year-old mother passed away, and her funeral was on that Friday, the 20th, so I'll always remember the date. On Saturday the 21st, many of our friends and family were trying to leave and head back east towards Nashville. They got caught in that storm. The storm was so devastating, it dropped 17 inches of rain that morning alone, just north of Waverly in a little town called McEwen, Tennessee. That wall of water built to where it was a 20 to 25 foot tall of water, a tidal wave. And it came down a little babbling brook called Trent Creek into Waverly, and the devastation is incredible. A 25-foot wall of water. Individuals, there was a man that worked for Frito-Lay, standing in a store putting chips on the shelf. He noticed water at the doorway, and he turned to say something to someone, and in less than a minute, he was up to his shoulders in water. There were 20 lives lost in that flooding. It happened so rapidly. It happened so quickly. The congregation there in Waverly is about 250 to 300 in size. They've helped many times for minor flooding, tornadoes, other events that have happened there. They sprang into action, and they have been an inspiration for all of us as we watch their work. Their building is being used right now as a Red Cross Center of Relief, where they have people sleeping in their fellowship area. FEMA set up offices in their building to interview people to try to get them federal assistance. The health department was there giving tetanus and hepatitis vaccines, and they've taken truck after truck of supplies to help individuals. Right now, we're on our way to Waverly this afternoon when we leave here to do follow-up, because there's a second phase to disaster relief that I want you to know about. And that's after people get back into their homes or a new residence. If they've lost certain items, then we also provide those at no cost. If it's there's criteria, eligibility to receive that. If you have a family income of less than $30,000 a year, or if you have no flood insurance or insurance to cover your loss, or if it's a senior and they have no other way of replacing it, then disaster relief will provide, again, at no cost to the local congregation, an appliance, furniture, and beds to replace that which was lost. And right now, the congregation in Waverly is distributing literally hundreds of beds, appliances, and furniture to people that lost everything in those floods. At the same time, they're setting up and doing Bible studies. And that's one of the things that I believe we as Christians should pay more attention to, is that when people have lost things, their heart might be more open. You might find them more receptive. Case in point, on January the 25th, 2021, a little town called Center Point, Alabama, just north of Birmingham, Centerpoint and Fultondale were hit by an F4 tornado during the night. This is in January. So I want you to think for just a minute about January. Even though it's in the south, it's still January. It's still cold. It's still miserable. The tornado has come during the night and they've lost everything. By the way, it's in the midst of the pandemic. It's in the midst of a time where people are reluctant and afraid to get involved in doing some things. And this congregation in Centerpoint had lost their building. Because of the pandemic, at the beginning of the pandemic, they were told that they could no longer assemble in the building that they were leasing. So they were broadcasting virtually, like many congregations were. And they found themselves in a difficult situation. Our community has been hit by this tornado. We want to help, but we don't even have a building. We don't have a place to even take the supplies. The Gardendale congregation just north of there said, "We'll take the truck and you can work from here." And they did that, but they were 9 miles away. And anything that you see about a disaster, it's best if you can be right there close by. So they went to the community center in Center Point, and Center Point said, "You can use this building at no charge." So we sent the truckloads, they unloaded there, they started helping. The first thing that happened within a couple of days was that the director of the community center saw what they were doing, saw how they were helping, asked questions, asked if she could study. They studied with her and she was baptized. She became a Christian. This is the director of the community center, not one of the recipients. The director of the community center that saw them doing what Paul talked about in Galatians chapter 6. Well, then they started helping families and they started setting up Bible studies. And the minister there sent me a note and said, "We have baptized 6 individuals already just from giving out the supplies." I said, "Well, how did you baptize them? You didn't." They said, "Well, we had a brother from Louisiana that came up and he had a portable baptistry. And we set up a portable baptistry in January in Alabama and baptized 6 people." And I called him to say what a wonderful thing that was and appreciate him sharing. He said, "Well, it's not exactly right." And I said, "Really? What's wrong?" He said, "Well, it's up to 9. And he said, "We have 13 Bible studies ongoing, and one of them is with a lady who's 102 years old." And I want you to just think for a minute. Because they were struck by this tornado, because they had over 400 families that were left without a home, they saw the opportunity and they took the opportunity to help and to talk to them about Jesus. Now there are at least 9 souls that have been baptized and ongoing Bible studies. You see, in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, the Apostle Paul tells the church at Corinth, "I planted, Apollos watered, and who gave the increase? God gave the increase." Brethren, we're not charged with keeping count. We are given the commandment to plant. Every time you do something in the name of the Lord, you're planting seed. When you do a kindness, when you do what God has asked us to do, you're planting seed. We don't have to worry about counting it. God will give the increase and God's keeping the count. After Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast back in 2005, we didn't ask for counts. We sent dozens and dozens of trucks. We didn't ask for counts. We know for a fact that there were over 300 baptisms and 1,700 plus restorations as a result of the work that congregations did following Katrina. I could go on and on and on. I'm looking at the clock. The clock is not my friend this morning because you may get the sense that I could talk about this for hours, and we could. I could talk to you about Chokoloskee, Florida, which is a place I didn't even know it existed and much more didn't know how to pronounce it. But if you look at the peninsula of Florida, down at the very southern tip, there's a little bitty place on the map called Everglades City. And don't let that city part deceive you. Everglades City is not much more than a wide spot on the road, but it's the last town that's listed on the map when you're looking at Florida. And I thought when Hurricane Irma came through and hit southwest Florida, Everglades City would be as far south as we went. Not true. If you go 4 miles south of Everglades City and cross a bridge that is little more than a few pallets across a couple of 2x4s, you come to the place called Chokoloskee, which has 1,100 residents. And Chokoloskee was under a 9-foot storm surge so that everything in that community was impacted. The congregation of the Lord's Church in Naples, Florida took truckloads of supplies from disaster relief and went down and helped in Chokoloskee and established a congregation that's now assembled and meeting there. I could talk to you about Holly Springs, Mississippi. Christmas Eve, I believe it was about 2015. On the 23rd of December, late in the afternoon, a tornado started in West Mississippi near the Mississippi River. It was on the ground for 80 miles. It hit Holly Springs, which is just southeast of Memphis. That tornado did a tremendous amount of devastation in Holly Springs. And I started trying to call to contact someone from the Holly Springs congregation. Now, I want you to keep in mind the time frame. It's December the 23rd when the storm hits. It's the morning of December the 24th that the world knows as Christmas Eve. And I'm trying to locate a congregation in rural Mississippi and trying to contact someone. It's hard to find contacts at congregations during the week in most of the time. But on Christmas Eve, to try to get a hold of someone, I went through on the internet. I found 3 numbers. The first 2 had been disconnected. The third one I answered, and the gentleman said, "I'll have someone call you." So we're in the Eastern time zone. Mississippi's in the Central. It was about 1 o'clock Eastern time when I finally made contact on December the 24th. The elder that I was speaking with from that congregation said, "Well, I've never heard of you." And I said, "I understand that." He says, "But let me understand. You want to send us a truckload of supplies, $80,000 of supplies, give it to us at no cost for us to distribute." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, that would be fine. When do you plan on sending the truck?" I said, "We can have the truck there tomorrow." He said, "I don't know if I can get anyone to unload it because we're talking about unloading it on December the 25th at 8 a.m. And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, send the truck. We'll see what we can do." One of our volunteer drivers, we contacted him. He said that he had plans with his family for their holiday celebration at 7 o'clock that night. He would be finished and he'd be ready to leave by 11 p.m. and he could be in Holly Springs at 8 o'clock on December the 25th. We sent the truck. When the truck pulled up, they had 67 people there to unload that truck. Now, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story, what I didn't realize was the elder I had spoken with also happened to be the county superintendent of schools. And what he did after we spoke on the 24th is that he contacted the principal of every school in that county, and he had a list of every family that had been impacted by that tornado. When that truck arrived at 8 o'clock on the morning of the 25th, they unloaded it. They put the supplies into pickup trucks and trailers. By 12 noon on the 25th, every family that had been hit by that tornado had been impacted by the Lord's Church. When we visited there just a short period of time later, they had 6 families that were worshiping with them that had never been to the Lord's Church before. You see, over and over and over again, I could tell you about Century, Florida, the tornado that they had, and the people that lived around them that they'd tried for years to encourage them. They'd invited them to Bible school. They'd invited them to VBS, gospel meetings. They'd done door-knocking campaigns with no response. After the tornado hit and devastated that area, 4 weeks later, one of the elders called me on a Wednesday evening and said the man and woman were both baptized tonight. You see, over and over and over, in Georgetown, South Carolina, after the floods in 2016, a family was there working, a couple, they were members of the Lord's Church, their 28-year-old niece, had come with them to help. And just in helping to distribute those supplies, she asked the preacher if they could study. And they went and they studied and she became a Christian. So it's not just those that you have helped directly, but it's anyone that's involved with seeing us put our faith in action. Galatians 6, 9, and 10. As we therefore have opportunity. Brethren, opportunities exist around us all the time. Disasters are one of the ways when we see, when we take the opportunity that God has given us to plant seed, then God will give the increase. I believe my time's up, so I'm going to have to stop, and I'm really sorry. I didn't even give a chance for anybody asking questions. I do want to quickly tell you that on the table out just outside the door here, there are several pieces of literature. There's a quarterly newsletter that we put out. There's a monthly summary that shows everywhere that we've assisted with this year. And there's this blue brochure that tells more about disaster relief. I encourage you to pick those up. We also have some 2022 calendars and some pens out there for your convenience. And I'm happy to answer any questions now. I think we're going to dismiss, but if you have any questions, let me know. I'm happy to answer them. During our worship hour this morning, we're going to hear an account of what happens when that truck was unloaded in a location, and we're going to see what God would have us to do when we are reaching out to those in need. Thank you so much for your kind attention.